CJ Allo News, I'm Serena Abuljood. On Wednesday morning, the police, along with railway workers, dismantled a homeless encampment in Montreal's Rosemont borough, leaving seven people with nowhere to sleep. The encampment was set up next to train racks near Saint-Laurent Boulevard on grounds that are owned by Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railway. Encampments in that region have been around for years, and while some business owners told Radio Canada that they were content to see the encampment dismantled, others who lived nearby said that the encampment did not inconvenience them much. Richard Côté, one of the people who were evicted, said that the city did not give him an eviction notice. He also said that the city did not offer him reasonable aid, and that finding shelter has been impossible since most places require references, and many of them refuse him for being too old. Maxime Bonneau, head of community organization Parc de Rue, voices concerns for unhoused people that are further being isolated. He says there is an extensive need for long-term resources and finances instead of temporary emergency shelters. There is an estimate of 4,690 visibly unhoused individuals in the city, with only 1,600 spots in emergency shelters. In the span of 10 days, Israel bombed six schools in Gaza. The most recent attack targeted a United Nations-run school in the central Nusayrat refugee camp and killed at least 25 Palestinians. To justify the attacks, Israel said that Hamas fighters were hiding in the schools they bombed. Since October 7, Israel has destroyed more than 400 schools in Gaza, abolishing 88% of Gaza's educational facilities and leaving 620,000 school-aged Palestinians out of school. As of today, more than 38,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israel since its invasion of the Gaza Strip. For more, follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tommy John Show here on CGLO 1690 AM. I am your host, Tommy Lane, and every Monday here on CGLO from 2 to 3 p.m., it's the Tommy John Show, where we discuss everything going on in the world of sports. Hope everyone's doing well on a sunny and hot July the 22nd. We have a busy show today. We have to recap the Open Championship, which happened over the weekend. Big news in Formula One, the Olympics starting Friday. And NFL training camps are officially underway. This has all happened and happening this week. And when people think of July or the summertime, they don't think of a lot of sports. You think of baseball, maybe some golf. Every 4 years, we have this thing called the Summer Olympics. And we finally made it through the dog days, and we have NFL training camp. So NFL storylines are everywhere. So we will get all the information on that front. So why don't we start off with what happened over the past week. And like I mentioned, the Open Championship happened at Royal Troon. And we have a new champion golfer of the year. It is Xander Schauffele from the United States. 9 under par to win the tournament, shot 6 under on the last day. Justin Rose from the UK in second, tied with Billy Horschel at 7 under. This is Xander Schauffele's second major of the year. Remember, he won the PGA at Valhalla in May. Hadn't really done much going into the Open. Didn't play that great in Scotland. Was hit or miss at the US Open. Was around, but then fizzled out. Played amazing yesterday. 6 under par. He is the champion golfer of the year. And honestly, an Open Championship where not many big names were in the hunt. Sure, Justin Rose a few years ago was a big name, but Billy Horschel, Russell Henley, Shane Lowry. You know, you had that brown guy at the top for a while. Was it Daniel Brown or something? He was around the lead. You still had the likes of Scheffler and Rahm finishing near the top 10 or just in the top 10, but they were never really in the golf tournament. But you had Rory, DeChambeau, Hovland, I know Tiger, they all missed the cut. So it was kind of the secondary stars playing the weekend. And I don't know if that'll have impact on the ratings at all. But still, it was such a tough golf course, especially that back nine was playing so long into the wind. But amazing job by Xander Schauffele. And we all thought Scottie Scheffler, runaway player of the year, which he very well could be if he wins the FedEx Cup. He has a green jacket in there. He's won, 6, 7 times on tour. But Xander Schauffele, 2 major championships. You know, he's making a strong case for himself. He will be at the Olympics as well, which start on Friday. We are 3 days, 23 hours, 22 minutes, 10 seconds. I have the timer up right in front of me until the Paris Olympics begin. And it'll be 2.5 weeks of mayhem over different sports. I love the Olympics. It's fantastic. Excited to watch golf. Excited to watch tennis. Novak Djokovic posted on his story yesterday, already in the gym preparing. It's the only thing he hasn't won. Single gold medal at the Olympics. He's going for it, as well as Jannik Sinner, Carlos Alcaraz, all the top players in the world as well. Then, of course, you have great sports like water polo, track and field, you name it. So I'm looking forward to the Olympics. 100-meter dash was always my favorite. So we'll talk more about the Olympics later on in the hour. In Formula One, we had a lot of big storylines over the past weekend or so in Hungary. We had the first win for McLaren driver Oscar Piastri. Lando Norris, his teammate, finishes in second. Some controversy at the top whether Lando should have been allowed to win the race. We'll get into that. Lewis Hamilton in third. He's been fantastic the second portion so far of the season. Coming off the win in the UK, finishes third this week in Hungary. Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, the two Ferraris, finishing fourth and sixth. Max Verstappen of Red Bull in fifth, and he was not happy over the weekend, getting mad at the team's strategy, saying, "I'm trying to do the best with what this team's offering me right now." And earlier in the year, when the whole Christian Horner scandal was coming out, I know that kind of fizzled away. People said Max might be done at Red Bull. He wins a bunch of races in the beginning. You're like, no, this is not going to happen. He's not going to leave Red Bull. Are you kidding me? Like, why would he leave the best team? He's winning every race. But he hasn't won in a while now. It's been a minute. And the reports are flying out that he might want out at Red Bull unless there's massive change, which is crazy. And you look, there's teams like Mercedes, you know, with Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari next year, there's a seat open. Good Toto Wolff and Ferrari and Mercedes throwing an insane amount of money at Max Verstappen. Interesting to see. The NFL reported for training camp, the Chiefs, the champs, were even looked like they arrived early. Patrick Mahomes has been in pads since Friday throwing the ball around, and it's officially here. NFL training camp is officially here, and I cannot be happier. Aaron Rodgers expect to report tomorrow. The reason we say that is because earlier in the offseason workouts, he wasn't there. Mandatory minicamp, he wasn't there. He was in Egypt on vacation. So some people are saying, well, yeah, training camp is, you know, the 23rd of July, 22nd of July, in that range. Is Aaron going to be there? We shall see. We shall see. That's going to be a huge storyline. Obviously, he'll show up, but he's just, it's such a crazy situation going on in New York. It really is. Now, he did a podcast over the weekend with Barstool Sports. He seemed into it. Seemed like he cared. Was going down memory lane with his old Packers plays and saying how excited he is about this group in New York. We shall see. But right now at NFL training camp, we have a bunch, like the Patriots reported already, the Chiefs reported, Washington, a bunch of teams are reported. And it's really fun if you're a team like Chicago, Washington, New England, you have these young star quarterbacks, hopefully, and fans want to see them. And the big change, too, is at Patriots training camp, the last few years, Belichick didn't let really any media in. The fans could watch from a far distance. Now with Gerard Mayo, fans are allowed closer to the field, full media access, so we're able to see more from the New England Patriots organization, which I'm looking forward to as a Patriots fan. We finally get to see some of the passing plays. We would just hear word. We would just hear things. Oh, he looks from 300 yards away, you know, Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi, they look pretty good. Now we can actually see them up close, have cameras there. Happy to have NFL training camp back. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to discuss some college football, what I expect from Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes this year, as well as teams I think that are locked for the new 12-team college football format. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Did you hear that?
It's the sound of the Fantasia International Film Festival, back for another year on the downtown campus of Concordia University from July 18th to August 4th. North America's premier genre film festival is your place to see the most eye-poppingly, face-meltingly extraordinary films from around the world. For more information on movies, tickets, and showtimes, check out FantasiaFestival.com. And be sure to listen to CJLO and check out CJLO.com for your chance to win tickets. This is all brought to you by CJLO 1690 AM and the fine folks at
Fantasia.
Tune in to Mo Ritmo Radio for some amazing jams from the worlds of Latin American rhythmic music. Saturdays at 5 p.m. only on CJLO. Mo Ritmo with Mr. B.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So yeah, like I mentioned earlier, we're going to get into some college football talk for a bit, because while the NFL starts September, in a month's time, we will have some college football games, even before Labor Day, which is fantastic. So once again, even after only winning four games last year, the talk of the college football world, besides the new college format and team switching conferences, you have USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington going to the Big Ten. You have you have Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC. You have the Pac-12 has two teams in it. I mean, there's just, that's one of the main conversations as well. We'll get into that as well. But the other big one, once again, coming off through a 4-win season, are the Colorado Buffaloes and Coach Deion Sanders. Now, people, I think, forget what happened in Boulder, Colorado prior to Deion Sanders' arrival. They were 1-11. Yes, 1-11. The laughingstock of the Pac-12. And just a bottom-tier college program would get no more than a 3-star recruit. Like, that's who they were. That's what the Colorado Buffaloes were. Then they hired Deion Sanders. And they became the thing in college football. And he takes over a program which stunk. His first year, he had to let, I don't know how many kids he had to let go. It was insane. Bring in the new kids, install the playbook, and see what happens. Now, they started off 3-0, and then obviously they go 1-8 down the stretch. That's not ideal. But look at that Pac-12 last year. I think we would be lying to say that that conference last year in its last real year was maybe the strongest Pac-12 ever. Think about it. You have Utah, who were the favorites going into the year. Great, great team. They had to play them. Arizona finished, 9-3? Their coach was so damn good, he took the Washington job when DeBoer left for Alabama. Oregon, Bo Nix went, 12th in the draft? And they were, if they would have won the Pac-12 championship game, they would have been in the college football playoff, and their only two losses were to Washington, who beat Texas in the semifinal in the Sugar Bowl and lost to Michigan in the national championship game. That was Oregon's only two losses. So you have Oregon, who were elite. Washington could have won the national championship, went undefeated into the last game. Arizona, Utah, USC, Caleb Williams, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner and number one pick in the draft. He was on the team, and they played him tough. Their first game ever, they played TCU, who were in the national championship the year before. I understand not the same TCU team. We understand that. Oregon State had how many offensive linemen taken in the first round this year? They had that kid who went to New Orleans at 15. They had another kid go early second round. And DJ Uiagalelei played very well. He got the opportunity to play at Florida State this year. You look at the Pac-12 last year, that was a generationally unbelievable conference. Arizona ended the year 11th. Oregon, Washington, USC, Arizona. In his first year, they won 4 games. They won 1 the year before. 1. So the reason I'm bringing that up is because now they're switching conferences. They're playing the Big 12. But all I have to hear this year is how Deion set up for another 2-win season, and he might get, thrown out the door. First of all, I don't think Colorado will ever do that. They love the attention he brings. And they were irrelevant beforehand. They haven't been relevant since, the mid-90s? But you look at this schedule this year. They still, of course, they beat Nebraska last year. Nebraska supposedly better. Okay. But North Dakota State, Nebraska, Colorado State, Baylor, Central Florida, Kansas State. They do play Arizona again. Cincinnati, Texas Tech, Utah, Kansas, Oklahoma State. Now, name one team on this schedule, apart from Utah, apart from Arizona, because they played them last year, who was better than Oregon last year, better than Washington, better than USC, even UCLA. The answer is none. Everyone tells me how good Nebraska and this freshman quarterback is going to be. Okay, I haven't seen him played yet. But North Dakota State's a Div 2 school. Colorado State, I know they played them tough last year. Fair enough. Baylor's nothing to go crazy about. Central Florida's lost a whole bunch of players. Kansas State, no. Cincinnati, they're not the team that went to the national championship a few years ago. Texas Tech maybe is the worst defense than Colorado. And Kansas. I'm not saying Colorado's going to win the national championship. I'm not even saying they're going to win 10 games. But the act like Deion Sanders can't go from 4 wins to 7 wins. Even 6. If they improve from this year to next year, it's a plus for them. All you want to see is steady progression. Steady progression. But the problem is, I think because of this new transfer portal thing, they think, well, why can't Deion just work his magic and get us a national championship team instantly? Because it takes a lot longer than that. And with this NIL money, Colorado, they don't have the same money as the South schools or Texas. Or even USC and UCLA that don't have the boosters like those schools do. So they're relying, of course, on the Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders, Deion Sanders hype train to bring recruits in. Now, this is going to be the last year with Travis Hunter and for sure the last year with his son, Shedeur Sanders, at quarterback. So is this an important year? Yeah. But if Colorado goes 8-4, 9-3 might be, I don't think they'll beat Utah. I don't think they can beat Arizona. Arizona's really good, but maybe. But if they get through those games, who says they can't have a really good record? Why not? I said it last week on this show. The reason why I wasn't buying the hype of some NFL teams for the one seed is just because their schedule's so damn tough. You look at AFC North teams, they have to play each other twice a year. Baltimore has to play the Bengals twice a year. The Steelers twice a year. The Browns twice a year. And they're all very good teams. That's much easier than the Chiefs playing the Raiders twice. And the Broncos twice. It's much different. Who you play matters. And also, I think the Chiefs get the South this year. Is there Crosstown, their NFC conference, one of the worst conferences in the league. That's why I said, oh, makes sense. Well, they probably have a better record than a Cincinnati or Baltimore. Same goes here. Where you play and who you play matters. And last year, Colorado, say what you want, had a gauntlet down the stretch. Absolute gauntlet. After their last win, when they won their third game, they went at Oregon, USC, then they were at Arizona State. They won that game. Stanford, UCLA, Oregon State, Arizona, Washington State, Utah to end the year. That's brutal. Like I mentioned, I don't know how many. Oregon State played Notre Dame tough in that bowl game too. And they were 7-1 when they played, I think, Colorado. 7-2. UCLA were 6-2 when they played Colorado. And Chip Kelly was coaching the hell out of them. I mean, that was a real deal conference. Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA, Arizona, Oregon State. They all were elite programs last year, all in the top 25. That's not the case with this schedule. Their toughest game this year is probably at Nebraska, at Arizona probably. But they're lucky. They get Utah at home, Oklahoma State at home. So even their toughest games, they get at home. There's no at Oregon on here. There's no at Utah. That's a big difference. Utah's a hostile environment. Not at UCLA. I'm telling you, this is a much easier schedule for Colorado. Much easier. Because the Big 12, now losing Oklahoma, losing Texas. Now, they did a good job of replacing them by bringing in BYU, Cincinnati, UCF, Houston. They did a good job just bringing in all the other programs to say, we can push this conference forward without Texas and Oklahoma. And they've done a very good job of doing it. But this is not as good of a conference on paper as the Pac-12 was last year. And to act like Shedeur Sanders is not one of the five or three best quarterbacks in college football, it's not true. To act like Travis Hunter is not one of the five best players in college football, it's not true. And to act like they still have all these other good receivers, good running backs. They said they bolster the offensive line. We shall see, because that was the main problem. Shedeur Sanders was running for his life. If the O-line's fixed and they get some stops on defense, I don't see why this can be a 7-9 win football team. And the conversation goes from Deion winning 4 games in his first year and doubling it his next year and just getting better and better and better. Trust me, if Deion has success, this program will take off. Take off. Because no one can recruit like him. No one. But all they need to see is his program getting better. And 1-4 wins is a huge improvement. I know people see the 4 wins and freak out. 1-4 is a huge improvement based on where Colorado was. Okay, this is a big year to jump from 4 into the winning record. 7-8. Maybe 9's a bit ambitious. But they can do it. If they lose at Nebraska, if Nebraska is who they say they are, but we shall see. Every year I have to hear how good Nebraska is going to be. Okay, we shall see. I know Matt Rule's a great coach, and they got this 5-star quarterback coming in. Okay. Let's say they lose that game, you lose at Arizona, and you lose either Oklahoma State or Utah. That's 3 losses. That's 9-3. If you want to throw at Kansas, because that quarterback's good too, 8-4, you would have doubled your win total. And now you go from a team that's a laughingstock to playing in a decent New Year's bowl game. And then the next year, I know you lose your son and your best player, Travis Hunter, but there'll be kids lining up to play for Deion Sanders if he starts winning. And that is true. So I see it. I see them having a winning record this year. If the improvements are true that I'm hearing from scouts and from Deion himself, even if it's half of what they're saying, Deion said they're going to have a great O-line, even just an average O-line. Shedeur Sanders can throw it. And they got crazy wide receivers out there that he recruited. But they just need their defense to stop anything. The amount of times last year where teams would just go up and down and score. Remember, they were up 29-0 on Stanford. And then I don't know where that defense went. Vanished in the second half. They let Oregon. I know Oregon was a great team, and their only 2 losses were to Penix and Washington, and Bo Nix was fantastic. You can't let them score at will like that. They didn't even score in the fourth quarter. So, I'm excited to see Colorado. I am looking forward to it. Because, man, if he were to turn Colorado around and win 8 games, who says he won't get a big-time offer from a big sleeping giant school? Reports it's USC. And now, the reason I chose USC is because this is a good segue. Because there's so many people in the media calling for Lincoln Riley's job. Lincoln Riley, 2 years ago, head coach at Oklahoma, just had Caleb Williams, had a good season. Obviously, 2 years earlier, won a Heisman. Oh, my bad. Jalen Hurts was nominated for a Heisman. The year before that, Kyler Murray won the Heisman. The year before that, Baker Mayfield won the Heisman. And then Caleb Williams wins one at USC. So, Lincoln Riley, as an offensive play caller and a quarterback whisperer, he is phenomenal. But the problem is that he doesn't like defense or doesn't value defense or thinks defense is an absolute waste of time. And they went 11-3 his first year, and then they were 8-5 last year. Not bad. Not terrible. I think he, all things considered, they just had a bad second half last year. Injuries caught up to them. And Caleb Williams tried to be Superman, and they lost some games. But they also had to play some unbelievable teams down the stretch. Let's not act like USC wasn't in the same conference as Colorado. They were. They absolutely were. They had to play Washington. They had to play Oregon. They had to play Utah. Like, come on. Come on. Washington. They put up 42 points against Washington, but the problem is Michael Penix puts up 52. Dylan Johnson from the Washington Huskies ran for 256 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's not a recipe to win. They lose 36-27 to Oregon. Bo Nix for 412 yards. We understand they are not that good defensively. But Lincoln Riley has never been good defensively. You remember when LSU played Oklahoma a few years ago when Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Terrence Marshall, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they were all there. And they put what Burrow had 7 touchdowns in the first half. And I know that's one of the great college teams of all time, but Oklahoma's never had good defenses when he was there. And the Rose Bowl, when Baker Mayfield won the Heisman, they played Georgia. Sony Michel and Nick Chubb went for, I don't know how many rushing yards. They couldn't stop him. Could not stop him. And that's who he was. That's why I don't get the surprise. Like, oh my God, he can't coach defense. Okay. He's going to understand how to do it. He has to bring a new defensive coordinator to understand that. But his teams can score points. Let's not get that twisted. But now there's people in the media after 2 years where USC might want to fire Lincoln Riley. After they paid him over $100 million, bought both of his houses in Oklahoma, private jet whenever he wants, basically the greatest deal of all time. It was 10 years, what, over $110 million, to coach USC. And let's not act like USC was the UFC when Marcus Allen was there, or even 10, 15 years ago when Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart are there. They've been firing coaches left and right. Ed Orgeron, remember, was the interim there, I think, for a bit. Lane Kiffin, fired. They fired everyone. Literally fired everyone. They've gone through, I don't know how many coaches since Pete Carroll USC has had. It's been insane. Now, historically, it's a great program, and everyone wants that USC football job if it's offered to them. Hence why I don't blame Lincoln Riley for taking it. But to act like it was stable before he got there and then he was just going to show up and USC was going to be the 0-4 Trojans, that's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. It's like Colorado. It's going to take time. His first year, he brings Caleb Williams with him, and they were in the Pac-12 championship game, lost to Utah, and he won the Heisman Trophy, Caleb Williams. That's not bad for a first year. His second year, okay, down the stretch, you played a great Oregon team. You played a great Washington team. UCLA, okay, you lose them. You go 8-5, okay. But to act like he should be fired is crazy. One of the main people calling for his job is Paul Feinbaum, who I respect. I think he's great for ESPN, the SEC. Does great work. But he has something against Lincoln Riley. Maybe because he left the Southern school, I don't know. But he's acting like Lincoln Riley's done the worst coaching job of all time. I've seen far worse. Far worse. Like, not even remotely close. Look at Mario Cristobal in Miami. He was great at Oregon, goes to Miami, doesn't believe in taking knees, and they lose a football game. That's worse coaching. It's not because of Lincoln Riley's coaching. They score points at will. It's just he cannot master defensive side of the ball. But to act like they can't fix that, he signed a 10-year deal. When did USC think they were going to win this national championship? Immediately? So anyway, his big argument why Lincoln Riley took the USC job was because Oklahoma and Texas, but he worked at Oklahoma. Oklahoma was joining the SEC. He didn't want the big boys in the SEC. And he thought, you know what? I'll go to the Pac-12 and play those schools. And then now he's saying, oh, he's scared to play in the Big Ten. Acting like the Big Ten some powerhouse. They've already played Oregon. Oregon's a good team. Washington won't be as good. And then who else? You look at the conference, it's Michigan, Ohio State, And Penn State, like Penn State lose every big game. I don't remember the last time Penn State won a big game. They lose in the bowl. It's not just because they lose to Ohio State and Michigan, which they do every single year. Coach Franklin does not win big games. It's not what he does. But every year I hear Penn State's the best team on the paper in the country. Penn State, I'm like, yeah, they'll lose to Ohio State. They'll lose to Michigan. And then they'll play an SEC team in a bowl game and get stomped on, which is exactly what happened against Ole Miss. But wait, Lincoln Riley's scared to join the Big Ten. That's two schools that really can impact him. It's Ohio State and Michigan. That's it. And you add in Oregon, okay. He's not scared of the Big Ten. That's ridiculous. But this is Paul Feinbaum talking about Lincoln Riley, and boy, he did not speak kindly of him.
I think he's been a disaster. Let's go back 3 years. Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC. It was announced at this moment in time. What did Lincoln Riley do? He ran away. He did not want to deal with the Southeastern Conference at OU. He took what he thought was an easier course, so he goes out to Southern Cal. He takes Caleb Williams. Good first year, but since then, everything has gone wrong. I thought last year was one of the worst coaching jobs I have ever seen. Quite frankly, had I been the athletic director at Southern Cal, I would have fired Lincoln Riley because he's yet to show, after many years as a head coach, he knows anything about defense. He's gone through defensive coordinators. He just simply couldn't handle it. And now things are going to be five times worse in the Big Ten. On top of that, a number of his top players are bailing out. This is a guy who owned L.A. for about a half a minute. And quite frankly, next year at this time, I think he'll more than likely be an assistant in the NFL if he's that lucky.
So those are strong words. My God, were those strong words. I hate that argument where, oh, he left the SEC. Like, maybe that's true. But then they hype it up. It's going to be five times worse in the Big Ten. Who's amazing in the Big Ten? It's like three schools. He's scared of Northwestern. He's scared of Iowa, who can't score more than 10 points. Purdue, Indiana, Illinois. What do you mean the Big Ten? What the hell are you talking about? Seriously. Scared of the big, I'm not a USC guy. I'm not even a huge Lincoln Riley guy. But he says, oh, he had an amazing first year, but then the second year, not so good. Disaster second year. He should be fired. Well, excuse me, he's only been there 2 years. And he took Oklahoma to three Final Fours. He's coached three Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield was a walk-on at Texas Tech. Walk on at Oklahoma. He makes him win the Heisman Trophy. Kyler Murray transferred from Texas A&M. I know he was great in high school and all that. I get that. But transferred from Texas A&M. Was a baseball player first. Wins a Heisman Trophy. Jalen Hurts got replaced by Tua at halftime of the national championship game. People said he was done. He took Jalen Hurts. They went to a Final Four. And he was nominated for the Heisman Trophy, but no one was beating Joe Burrow that year. And then replaces Spencer Rattler at halftime with Caleb Williams against Texas. They win the game. He goes to USC with Caleb Williams. They win a Heisman Trophy. It's outrageous how, like, what he does with these quarterbacks and act like he has one bad year and he's going to be fired is crazy to me. He had one bad year. They still won 8-5. They're the USC. USC were an absolute dumpster fire mess before he got there. Just a disaster. And I'm sorry. I this Lincoln Riley hate. Maybe it's because he got the big contract and he works for the SEC network and he's like, oh, he just didn't want to play in the SEC. That's why he left. That's why he left. Give me a break, man. Why didn't Steve Sarkisian leave Texas when they joined? He could get another job somewhere else. I bet if he really, really wanted to, he can get a job anywhere he wants. I bet if he wanted that Michigan job when it was up for hire, he could have gotten it. I bet if he wanted that Washington Huskies job, if he wanted to play easier teams, he could have gotten it. Why did he stay at Texas? And I know Texas is the biggest program in the country. I understand that. But Oklahoma, what, right behind him? If Oklahoma is, what, 6th? 7th? Like, I know Texas is the dream job because you have the best recruiting pool and the history, the Longhorns. But what about the Sooners? He's acting like he was coaching at Rutgers. Oh, my God. Ridiculous. He thought it was Rutgers hiring him or something. He took the job at USC, okay? My goodness. Ridiculous. And Oklahoma maybe just won a new challenge. What more could he have done at Oklahoma? Really, he was there for 6 years. They've been to how many college football games? Well, he's going to win a national championship? Okay, maybe. But sometimes you just want to change. And they're like, hey, instead of living in Norman, Oklahoma, here's $110 million. Here's a house on the beach. Here's a private jet anytime you want. Here's $12 million a year. Here's this. You're going to take it. And to act like he took that job because he was avoiding the SEC is crazy. And now that he's going to be screwed, that he's in the Big Ten. Ooh, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Maryland, Michigan State, Minnesota, Northwestern, Rutgers. Oh my God, it's that's not a great conference. It's a skewed conference because you have 3 to 4 really, really, really good teams. And the rest are just awful. Awful. Michigan, Ohio State are la creme de la creme. If you want to put Oregon there, they never win big games, but all right. I'd put Oregon and Penn State in the same category of they could win the Big Ten, but they have past history of choking. So that'd be their category. And then you have the unknown, which I put the USC, Nebraska, Washington, Wisconsin. Now, Washington, I know, won a national championship game this year, but they lost Kalen DeBoer to Alabama, their head coach. They lost Michael Penix. They lost Roma Dunze. They lost Jalen Polk. They lost their whole offense. Will they be as good? We shall see. But it's not that great of a conference. It's not. And to say, I bet Nick Saban maybe was considering leaving if he got that USC offer. I hate that when they said, oh, you left, you didn't want to play in the SEC. Baloney. Baloney. And I'm not a Lincoln Riley guy. I'm not. I think he's a good coach, but he's just not, like, I wouldn't. No, he's not my favorite coach. He coaches one of my least favorite programs. I hate USC as a Notre Dame guy. I hope they fire Lincoln Riley so they can hire some mid-tier college coach and they'll continue falling into this pattern that bottom tier organizations go into of just firing people instead of trying to find out what the problem is. I bet if Lincoln Riley gets fired at USC and he gets hired by another Div 1 school, that Div 1 school will see massive improvements. USC, man, you were desperate to get this guy. And what after a one really good first year and a subpar second year, you're going to fire him? And if he has a bad year this year, you're going to fire him? No. That's crazy. But I will say this. These people in the SEC think that they are la creme de la creme, which the new conference is, I have to tell you. You look on paper, they are by far the best conference. But they look down at everyone else, and that was a prime example. He just didn't want to play with us in the SEC. It wasn't like he got the greatest offer of all time and left. That couldn't be it. He was looking for a way out. If he was looking for a way out, then he would have just left for another job. LSU was on the table. Why didn't he go to LSU? Why? Because he didn't want to coach in the SEC. You know, maybe he would rather live on the coast in California than Baton Rouge or Norman. I'm sorry. And that coaching job wasn't as bad as he's making it out to be. The worst coaching job he's ever seen. Come on. Come on now. And I'm not a Lincoln Riley guy. This is the 100th time I'm saying this on this show. I'm not a Lincoln Riley guy. But I'm becoming a Lincoln Riley defender. He's turned three. Okay, Caleb Williams, you want to say generational talent? Fine. But why did he go to Oklahoma? Because he wanted to be coached by Lincoln Riley. That's why USC will always have very good quarterbacks if Lincoln Riley's there. Because all the top quarterbacks want to play with him. Kyler Murray was the number one player in the state of Texas. Where did he transferred from A&M to Oklahoma because Lincoln Riley had a quarterback opening. Baker's going to go for the draft. Kyler Murray, I'm heading over. Jalen Hurts, I want to play in the NFL. Where am I going to go transferred? I'm going to go to Oklahoma because I want to be coached by Lincoln Riley. Caleb Williams, you're the number one player in high school. Where do you want to go? I want to go to Oklahoma to play with Lincoln Riley. Caleb, Lincoln's going to USC. Well, I'm going to USC too. I want to be coached by Lincoln Riley. All the top quarterbacks who want to go number one overall, just look, Baker Mayfield went to Lincoln Riley, won the Heisman, won number one overall. Kyler Murray went to Oklahoma, won the Heisman, goes number one overall. Caleb Williams goes to Oklahoma, transfers USC, wins the Heisman, goes number one overall in the draft. That's what great quarterbacks are going to see. They're going to see, hey, Lincoln Riley turns very good players into Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks and will get monster deals in the NFL because they're going to go number one overall. He's going to turn me into a great quarterback. And USC right now, that's your best chance. You get the best quarterback in the nation to go there, and hopefully that makes other recruits want to play with them. And for him to act like that's not a huge, off one down year that they got to fire him is outrageous. And I'll never believe it. I'll never buy it. So I think he'll have a bounce back year. I do. The Big Ten's not as the Big Ten. It's not the SEC. It's not. You have two proven programs and two programs who think they're proven but haven't won anything. And then like two mystery schools. And USC is one of the mystery schools. Just saying. One quick ad. We'll come back. We'll talk some NFL training camp here on the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from John Talon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. It is Cinema Public for a lively cinema.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
All right, gang, let's really nail it this time. Here we go.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema?
Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday from 8 to 9 a.m.
Only on CJLO 1690 a.m. in Montreal with your hosts, Remy
and Danny.
This is how we do it. Da, 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 da. Hey, I never asked you.
Yeah.
You like guacamole? Oh, run, run! Oh, God! Run!
Back here on the Tommy John Show, just getting word that Dean Avison has now been hired as the head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets. He was the head coach of Minnesota until he was fired earlier this year, but he will take over for Columbus. Just saw that report now from TSN. So the Blue Jackets have themselves a new coach. They were looking for consistency. They wanted Mike Babcock. That whole situation last year happened. Wasn't too good for PR, I'd say. So, yeah, NFL training camps start this week. and we keep hinting at doing predictions, but next week we're going to do a proper preseason prediction. We'll go through each conference, say who I think's going to make the playoffs, who I like in each matchups. And then I get a redo, I'd say halfway through the year. And at the end of the year, we'll see how I do. That's what we'll do here. We're going to do, all right, here's my preseason predictions. We'll check on them at, say, week 10, see how far off or how accurate I am, and then end of the year, we'll see what happens. So last week I was making the case for Kansas City and Houston and Buffalo for being very good teams for the number one seed, not because just on paper, but because of schedule. I said Baltimore I think is going to be tough. I think Cincinnati it's going to be tough. Teams like that, it's going to be tough because their schedule is brutal. But Kansas City and Houston, their schedule is not too bad. And a lot of their tough matchups are at home and early. Like Kansas City, they get Cincinnati and Baltimore like week one and two. Then they coast pretty much the rest of the way. So I said that's why, not just because they have Mahomes and Andy Reid, but I said for a defending Super Bowl champion, that's a really easy schedule. Houston, pretty easy schedule. Now, I know their division's gone a lot better. Anthony Richardson joining Indianapolis again. When he played last year, he was just fantastic. He was fantastic. But, you know, concussion 1 week, hurt his shoulder the next week. He was out for the year. Stalls a bit of the progress. But Shane Steichen almost made the playoffs with Gardner Minshew. Trevor Lawrence is one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league, in my opinion. He'll have another good year. So, yes, you have good teams in their division, but Houston on paper is miles, miles better than all of them. And their schedule outside of division is pretty easy, all things considered. So now we're going to look at the NFC and who I think could contend for the number one seed in the NFC. Now, beforehand, we're just going to say who people think it's going to be. If you just talk about rosters and past history, you'd say, well, it's the Niners to lose. And Detroit, it's a foregone conclusion. They're going to be there. Okay, but there's a reason why we have schedules. There's a reason why. If we were just going on best teams, we just look at a depth chart. And that's what we do. My first team we're going to look at is the Detroit Lions. In my opinion, they should have been in the Super Bowl last year if Dan Campbell made some better decisions down the stretch. He's a young coach. I love Dan Campbell. What he's done for Detroit is exceptional. But if he coached just a bit smarter, if he used his head instead of his heart, they're in the Super Bowl, and who knows? They match up pretty well. They beat the Chiefs last year. So they're going to learn from that. But their schedule, not the easiest. You open with the Rams. You have Dallas on the schedule. You have the Packers, obviously, twice. The Bears are supposed to be better. You have them twice. You have Jacksonville at Indianapolis. Buffalo at San Francisco. So last year, they had the benefit of having a pretty chill schedule. This year, I'm still saying they're a playoff team and they'll probably win their division. But unless they make an even bigger jump next year, if they're the same team from last year, I don't know if they're the number one seed. I don't. The team that we'd be competing with them for number one seed is obviously the San Francisco 49ers. And for some reason, for a team going for another Super Bowl appearance, they got off pretty light, I'd say. They open with the Jets at home, a shaky O-line, and a 41-year-old quarterback. Then they go to Sam Darnold and the Vikings. Rams will be tough. Then they play the Patriots, the Cardinals. They do have to face Kansas City, but it's at home. Dallas, Tampa, Seattle's taking a step back. Buffalo. I mean, at Miami, maybe. And then Detroit, December 30th. That, for I don't know what the hell happened with the schedule makers. Usually, the whole point of winning a division, the only negative side, or going to a Super Bowl, the only negative side is you'll have to play a harder schedule the next year. The Chiefs and the Niners, all things considered, as winners of their divisions and both playing in the Super Bowls, they got off extremely light. Are you kidding? 41-year-old quarterback to start at Minnesota, the Patriots, Arizona twice, like right off the bat. Seattle, okay. Kansas City, okay. They always hammer Dallas. Then it's Tampa Bay. I mean, Chicago's a hit or miss. At Buffalo, that'll be a tough one. And then Arizona, Miami, Rams. I said their toughest games, obviously the Chiefs, Lions, Buffalo. And besides that, I'm not like, I think the Rams will be much better. I think they'll be a playoff team. But they're a divisional team. They know them well. I'm not concerned. The Niners are, if this is the same, there's no Super Bowl hangover. Brock Purdy continues on his upward trajectory. They should be in the hunt. Now, another team we always look at for a number one seed is the Dallas Cowboys. And their schedule, not so friendly. They get Tom Brady's first game in the booth at Cleveland. New Orleans should be an easy game. Then Baltimore, at Pittsburgh, Detroit, at San Francisco, Philadelphia, Houston, Cincinnati, Eagles. Now, they do have their easy games in there. You have your Washington twice, division games, so we'll see. You have at Carolina. You have the Giants twice. So they're still going to be a borderline playoff team. But number one seed, no. Out of the question. They will lose. I think they'll lose 6-7 games. And you're not going to be the number one seed if you are 10-7. You just won't be. The other team in the conversation is the Philadelphia Eagles. They start off in Brazil against the Packers. And then, not too bad, all things considered. Not too bad. Dallas got a much harder schedule. Packers, Falcons, Saints, Bucks, Browns, Giants. They have to play Dallas twice. You play Washington twice. Rams, the Ravens game will be tough. You get Carolina. You get the Giants. And what the big thing is, you get the Steelers at home. You don't have to play the Steelers on the road. You get them at home. Dallas has to go to Pittsburgh. Commanders, Eagles, Giants. Not too bad. Much better. If you want to bet right now, just on schedule, Philadelphia has a much better chance than Dallas, based on that schedule, to win the East and be in contention. The last team we're going to look at is the Green Bay Packers. Now, the other team I'm looking at is Atlanta, but if Kirk Cousins is injured, I don't think they're on this team's level. They're not. The Packers have a very good chance. It's going to come down to them and Detroit. But they have Philly, Indianapolis, Tennessee, Minnesota, Arizona. Bears are the mystery, so we don't know. At San Francisco, they get them at home. They get the Dolphins at home. New Orleans, they should beat New Orleans. They'll beat the Vikings twice. They get the Bears at the end of the year on their home turf. I know they're fine the cold weather, but I'd watch out for the Packers. So the three teams right now, I think they compete for the number one seed, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Green Bay, right now. Dallas, I think, is great. Lions, I think, are great. They're just, their schedules are too tough. That will do it for this week of the Tommy John Show. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Monday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern on CJLO 1690 a.m. where we'll recap the first week of the Olympics and more NFL training camp talk. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. It's easier with you.
You're listening to C-